Okay, we come to chapter 5, Relational Parenting Part 2, Cultivating Your Relationship with Your Children. In chapter 5, you stress that presence is the essence of parenting. Presence is the essence of parenting. You often hear people talk about the difference between quality time and quantity of time, but you go deeper than that. Why is presence the essence of parenting?
Yeah, so in the unit on relational parenting, we first talked about the vertical dimension, the relationship between a child and God, and now we're moving to talk about the horizontal plane, the relationship between parents and their children. The idea of parental presence is one aspect of the theology of parenting that we didn't address in depth earlier. We alluded to it, but it comes out at this point in our book because we talk about the relational aspect of parenting. So it's part of reflecting about parenting as relationship. We focus on the importance of parenting being present with their children. I think both biblically and also anecdotally, presence in parenting is key. We see in the Bible that God's presence is vital. God is omnipresent. He's everywhere in the universe. And the first man, the first woman in the garden lived continually in God's presence until they rebelled, at which time they were expelled from God's presence. And then Jesus, when he came, manifested God's presence among us once again. And through the Holy Spirit, he reintroduces us to God's presence. And by God's grace, we'll live in God's presence in all eternity. So we see that there's just a massive biblical, foundation in terms of teaching on just how God's presence with us is so vital. And I think by analogy, parents likewise need to be present with their children. At first, when you look at the life cycle of parenting, this is primarily physical. Parents literally need to be with their children pretty much, 24/7 to nurture and protect them. And then gradually, the presence of parents becomes more focused on the emotional and the spiritual dimension, but physical presence remains important. And sometimes you learn about the importance of presence when you have to deal with the absence of a parent. I come from a family where my father left my mother when I was 18. And my parents later got divorced, but divorce doesn't happen, abruptly. Already during my teenage years, certainly looking back, I can see that my father increasingly just kind of drifted away from the family and was largely absent, which left a huge hole in my life that took me years to work out. Of course, ultimately, God helping me to many ways fill that vacuum with His own presence in my life.
Yes, and the fact that Andreas, that he dealt with this, we also see that in society there's a scourge of fatherlessness. And there's also a fact that even many mothers are now out working and leaving their children, say, in daycare and in the care of others. We see that even in intact families, fathers often spend little time with their children because of the demands of work or other factors or pursuit of personal activities and other things. So we believe that presence is vital in parenting. So even when our children are grown, we want to still be present with them in relevant and appropriate ways when they need us. And hopefully the character and values we instill to them in the first place through, direct contact and presence in the growing up years will remain with them for the rest of their lives. Our presence will basically live on.
Okay, let's take this one at a time. What about a father's presence with his children? Why is the father's presence so important?
Well, yes, Margaret just briefly touched on the scourge of fatherlessness in our society. In our book, we share some staggering statistics about the negative consequences of a father's absence in the lives of his children. Positively, as I mentioned before, father is called by God to be a spiritual leader and a role model in many ways. Especially my sons, I've seen have just a tremendous need to spend time with me, to look up to me, to learn from me, and in this way to be equipped for life. The father's daughters, my daughters too, need me to affirm them and to make them feel special and loved and appreciated. As a man, I've come to realize that family doesn't just need to be a priority for me in some sort of a mechanical way where you have some sort of list of priorities. My heart needs to be fully in and with my family. I need to ask God to help me to care deeply for each member of my family and to show a genuine interest in even some of the mundane details in my children's lives. That's how they know that I truly love them and that I'm totally engaged with their lives.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's turn to mothers. Why is it vital that the mother is present with her children?
Well, I think that's a very pertinent question, very relevant today because it is often not necessarily considered a priority in many families for a mother to spend her days with her children as a priority in her life. So feminism has had an indelible impact on our society. And today women are not necessarily aware that that was the precursor to the kind of society that we live in today. And they fall into roles that are now culturally acceptable, but fall outside the realm of God's ordained order. So I think it's an important question. And the answer to that question is essentially that the mother's presence is essential with her children because that's the way God ordained it. That's the way God planned it from the beginning. We all know instances where a mother has not taken up this mantle and responsibility and privilege. And as a result, there's been a huge hole felt in a child's life. But so not only is it God's design for a mother to nurture her child, statistics and not to mention anecdotal evidence amply confirms this. So I'm just going to reflect a little bit back on the biblical responsibility given to women. So biblically, the role of the mother is to devote herself to the nurture of her children, which enables the father to live out his responsibility of guiding and providing for his family. So there's different roles given to each, and this is the woman's role. So I'm aware that there's stages and opportunities in a woman's life to contribute to their home financially and otherwise and for her own self-development and that kind of thing. That's key and important, but here I'm trying to emphasize the core of femininity and the outworking of it in her family life. So especially in the early years of a child's development when trust is being developed, if there's a regular handing off of a child to a caregiver so that the mother is not present with her child, the mother that God gave to this child is not present and not active in this child's life, I would see that as a neglect of the stewardship and the privilege that God has entrusted to her, that this is the primary role that God has given to her in caring for her children. Mm-hmm. So there's a stage, in the early life of a child where trust is being developed. And it certainly requires the mother's consistent care and involvement, at that time. Beyond that, the toddler stage and then the early childhood, again, the consistent care and diligent discipline and involvement, as we mentioned before, is a role that a mother should be playing. So you just can't replace the mother. I realize that this ideal can't always be achieved. So there's sickness, there's divorce, there's other circumstances, and God knows those, and God will compensate, I'm certain, for the lack of the mother's ability to be present if it is not her choice. You know what I'm saying? So it's just not the ideal, though. So it's not something we should treat lightly. in just, you know, encourage or just allow for the women of our churches, our young women that we're bringing up, to treat this lightly and to pursue personal achievement, maybe, at the potential expense of our own child's life and their development.
Many parents have a kind of love-hate relationship with their children's peers, especially when they grow older. What are some of the issues here, and how does what we've just said about a father's and a mother's presence relate to the presence of peers in our children's lives?
Well, the book of Proverbs says that the man who walks with the wise will grow wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. We've said this to our children, you know, so many times. I think they could probably cite that passage in their sleep. As parents, we have a vital interest in who our children's friends are and even who their acquaintances are. And I'm saying that not, you know, as some sort of helicopter parent or as a parent who is hyper-controlling, but the goal is to help our children develop character and discernment so they can choose quality friends. As a young man or woman grows in maturity and begins using technological devices, texting and posting on social media also will be extremely influential. In many ways, those kinds of matters define a child's life, as everyone knows.
Yeah, so we're talking about the parents present in a child's life. We're talking now just briefly here about their friends and helping them develop friends, so to be involved in that aspect of their lives. And Andreas just mentioned the use of technology. So at some point in parenting, your child will be aware that there's technology and start talking about it. So how are you going to handle it? And we do talk about that in our book in a later chapter. Just briefly here, some parents advise delving into it as soon as the child begins to ask questions and allow them to start using social media in smaller ways, maybe gradually getting more involved in social media. At that time, these parents would advise, you know, passwords and that kind of thing. We're talking about being present in a child's technological life. So others would urge waiting until a later age. And so we've preferred an approach that incorporates a balance of both of these, primarily caution, maybe delaying a little bit, keeping parental involvement in the transition and training the child at a somewhat later stage than what might be normal in the culture is what would we encourage. So once they're accessing technology, even though you try to have the passwords and, you know, you limit certain things, guide their friendships, you cannot fully guide them through everything. They just have access to things that you once they're involved, there's ways of access which you will not know about, and so you have to be careful. Anyway, so we'll talk more about that later. But ultimately, the influence of friends is significant, a very important part for a parent to be involved in their lives, and it's, social media is key. So that's probably all for now on that.
All right.
Yeah, maybe I could just add here that,
sure.
You know, that's where relational parenting really is so important, because what we've said is pretty much presupposes that you've been able to develop a good relationship with your child, and so hopefully, you know, when they hit those years where they're really getting into smartphones and social media, they will be receptive to you, at least to some extent, and they will trust you that, you know, you don't want to just shut them down, but you want to help guide them in that area. So, you know, we've always tried marketing in particular to keep lines of communication open and to know our children's friends. One way that we found to do that is to keep our house open and to host events. We love to have, you know, kid magnets at our home, the basketball hoop, the fire pit in the back, and the large backyard. We try to make our place a fun place to be, and, you know, so our children's friends love to come over and play.
At the end of this chapter, you have an intriguing discussion about holy love. Don't all parents love their children? What is this holy love?
Yeah, it is one of those things. I read an article about the theology of one of America's greatest theologians, Jonathan Edwards, and he talks about holy love. And so it occurred to me that there was an application to parenting there. It's true, as you say, that most if not all parents love their children. Though, as we mentioned there, to some extent that may be affected also by our own actual selfishness and sometimes a certain amount of tension that comes between, us pursuing our own, self-fulfillment and sacrificing for our children. But I think a question that we don't ask ourselves, as often as we probably should is, not just do we love our children, but how do we love our children, truly and appropriately? So what I mean is, true love will, for example, not turn a blind eye toward our children's faults or weaknesses or sin. Well, as we are relational parents, we try to be present with our children. We'll try to intervene in the sense that we will lovingly correct them where needed. We will challenge them to greater excellence, both morally and vocationally. We'll challenge them to moral purity. Challenge them to develop in Christ-likeness, in greater maturity. So just to end on this on this note of challenge, to myself, to each of us as parents, not just to be self-satisfied. Well, of course we love our children, but do we really truly biblically act out our love toward our children in the way God would have us to.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right, we'll be back next time with Chapter 6.